Synthaholics, it's the Star Trek Podcast.
Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is your host, Aaron O'Brien. Dave Duncan is off. Today, I have my guest, Robbie Palmer from the Nerdynomicon.
What is up, you Trekkies and Trekkers? I don't actually know the proper vernacular. David told me that it's either or. So yeah. I decided to go with both. That way I bring everyone in and leave nobody out.
I like that you try to bring everybody in.
I do.
Robbie's been on the show quite a few times. We've had him on our roundtables. We've talked Dune. I think we talked Phantom Menace?
I want to say we did talk Phantom Menace.
Yeah. So, and we've, you know, and we've talked quite, we did the solo one recently with you, you and Dave. But we've never just talked Star Trek.
We haven't. But if I can pause you there and go back to The Phantom Menace, I tried to watch it yet again, trying to get myself in the right state of mind on how I wanted to discuss and really extrapolate my thoughts while I was trying to write my scripts for my analysis of The Last Jedi, which I'm still working on, and I don't think I'm going to be finished this year. I did rewatch The Phantom Menace, and I figured something out.
What?
You know that trick with, like, Apocalypse Now and Dark Side of the Moon? You know, you spark up a joint, you listen to Dark Side of the Moon.
You start the record, yeah.
If you watched that lightsaber battle to Duel of the Fates, Darth Maul, Obi-Wan, and everything, if you hit mute on the volume and turn on Sia's chandelier, it works.
That's really weird.
Yeah. Especially I mean, it helps if you're high with that one, too. But still.
I was going to say, I mean, because that wasn't, chandelier wasn't written.
Oh, God, no.
For like another 15 years,
give or take.
I don't know.
But it works.
That's weird.
Darth Maul's doing like pirouettes in the air. I want to swing from the chandelier.
Well, yeah. Oh, dude, it works. Well, I mean, Wizard of Oz. And Dark Side of the Moon.
That's what it was. Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, you're supposed to wait like...
Oh, yeah, it was Weird Al and Apocalypse Now. That's what it was.
Well,
that's what it was.
Well, Robbie, while you're here, why don't you just tell the good people, if they aren't aware of you, which they should be by now, what product that you give this world?
Did you have to word it that way? Well, let's see. I've got the YouTube videos. We've got a YouTube channel, youtube.com/nerdynomicon. We've got a couple of shows that we're getting ready to launch and also relaunch over there. The New Batch, where we record or we review every new show that comes on all the major networks.
Right.
And also, I'm starting up a film analysis series like what I was talking about with The Last Jedi called Sinful Analysis, where I try to go deep on movies that not only I love, but also I think have cultural significance to them. So everything from Fire Walk With Me to Dogma to, believe it or not, Twilight is on my list.
Even
though I hate Twilight, that movie has a lot of cultural significance and not in the way that Stephanie Myers anticipated, I think. I think it happened despite her, not because of her. There's a couple of other podcasts that are going to be launching that I'm either writing or producing with some friends of mine.
Okay.
But you can definitely find me a Nerdynomicon podcast.
Yeah.
The way I like to describe that is highbrow analysis with lowbrow humor.
That'd be about right. Yeah. That'd be about right. Yeah. Yeah, so you've been putting out, I think you said you're at 90 episodes?
By the time this is released, 91.
Nice.
91 episodes there. Yep. Have a recently defunct show and getting ready to launch Dad's a Pops Cast.
Nice.
So a parenting podcast with a couple of guys from the horror community. MJ Orrs, who's a horror writer, and Anthony Luciano from Irrational Fears.
Good night. Sleep tight.
Dude, it is so awesome to hear Anthony do his sign in and he's not trying to sound all ominous. He's like, I'm Anthony Luciano. I'm like, I'm so used to you being like,
creepy.
Welcome to Irrational Fears. I'm your host, Anthony Luciano. I'm like, they don't compute to me, but I spend more time talking to you on the friend level.
Right.
I know you, but on the podcasting level, I know this.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so he's got a persona.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. I mean, we all do.
Yeah, I don't know if I do.
You do.
I do?
All right. You do.
When I take it off, I cry. Well, Trek news, real quickly,
sure.
This just came across the other day is, I believe I'm saying her name right, Dana Gurria, who plays Michonne from Walking Dead.
Okay.
And she also was in
Black Panther. Wakanda forever, baby.
She is apparently courting to get into Star Trek IV, the next Star Trek movie.
No.
Yeah. And it's,
I love it.
I don't know. There's no like word of who she's playing or anything. Apparently, the talk is Chris Helmsworth is going to come back as Kirk's father.
No,
and we'll see what happens.
Oh, I love this.
So we don't know.
I do realize that the JJ films are so divisive because they have, you know, the Kelvin timeline. If I'm saying that correctly,
yes, that's correct.
But at the same time, you got to think of it. It is a perfect barrier to entry to a lot of,
yes,
especially the teenagers that didn't grow up with even so much as TNG.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not the world's biggest Trek fan, but
right,
my dad used to watch TNG, especially on syndication.
Yeah, you would sit down and it's just something you could just watch and be like, oh, it was a good show or whatever, but it was on.
Exactly.
It's like Seinfeld. Seinfeld's always on.
Precisely.
And you're just like, oh, Seinfeld's on.
So, I mean, these movies are the perfect barrier to entry to capture a whole new generation and bring it into Trek. So I personally think we should stop condemning different Trek and start celebrating any Trek.
I agree.
You know?
I agree. I think the issue is, I think J.J. got a beautiful look for a Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had the ideas, and again, J.J.'s awesome at like the getting you invested in the characters.
Right.
But then there's really no substance after that.
That's fair.
It's just an action movie, and you know, okay, I get it. It's just an action movie, no big deal. But you want some kind of spirit of Trek, and that's where I was like, what's happening here?
I get that. It's fair.
Into Darkness was one of that really fell down for me. I think I liked the first half of Into Darkness, and then it just gets into this just ridiculous, you know, Khan becomes, you know, Captain America, kind of like unbeatable super soldier. The Dreadnought is just ridiculous.
But
and
I mean,
it's fun. Don't
right,
get me
wrong. To people that don't know any better.
But it's
you
just
know?
Like, this really isn't Star Trek to me. This
and
is
any excuse to see Benedict Cumberbatch on TV, you know?
I guess, but
I do hear what you're saying, and I'm not arguing with you on that.
But it does get,
that's a very
it does
fair
get people through the door.
Comment. Yes.
And I don't knock anybody who likes those, and I think they are well-done movies.
Mm.
They're beautiful movies, actually. Even Into Darkness is just so cool and visually arresting at certain points.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't have a message behind it, which that's what usually Star Trek's about, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and my biggest fear, and I've talked about this on the podcast more than once, is that Discovery has the paywall, and I think it just blocks a lot of people out.
Yeah, about that paywall. On the YouTube channel that I mentioned earlier, youtube.com/nerdynomicon, I did a bingeable about Star Trek Discovery.
You did a wonderful job. I really liked your take on everything.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. That was a lot of Trek at once.
All at once. You're like,
because
too much Trek. It's in my eyes. It's in my ears.
But at the same time, there's no fucking way I'm giving CBS my money for that exact same reason. They launched this show with such a screwed up plan to launch their CBS All Access app with only one show leading the pack. And when I'm done with that, sure, I've got 17 seasons of NCIS, but I'm not 65-year-old years old or, you know, my grandma.
Right.
So I have no interest in 16 seasons of NCIS.
Right.
I'd rather watch my 3 seasons of Lucifer.
Yeah.
It was just a failed experiment, in my personal opinion.
Yeah.
If they brought it out to Netflix, I think it would have potentially, I'm not saying it would have, but I think potentially with the visual style that it had, with the star power it had, I think it could have come close to crashing the server the same way that Luke Cage did.
Yeah.
I think that the popularity was there. CBS didn't capitalize on it properly.
I know
that's my opinion.
I know they're trying to launch their own kind of service, mm-hmm. you know, Netflix, HBO Go kind of thing.
And Hulu. You do you, but do it in an intelligent way. Give us a reason to stick around.
Yeah, and this is the flagship show. And I know, obviously, this is successful because we got 5 more years of Trek. We've got, I think an extra 4 shows planned besides Discovery. So, I mean, there's a lot going on from CBS All Access that we're going to see. But the bad part is... who's going to see it?
Exactly.
Know? And those exactly. young kids that got into Star Trek Into Darkness and the first reboot,
mm-hmm.
they're probably not spending the $5, $6 a month for CBS All Access.
More than likely not. And it's kind of a tragedy. I mean, I'm a frequent listener to your podcast, not only because you guys are my friends, but also because I like the way you guys break down your shows. Mm-hmm. I like how you break down the narrative, apply it to the real world. The way you guys kind of reviewed and also discussed a lot of the episodes, especially with Discovery, because when I got done doing my binging,
yeah.
and I'm trying to figure out how do I feel about this
yeah.
show?
Yeah.
Is it a hot, jumbled narrative mess
right.
or what? I actually spent a couple of days while I was working my day job and binged every single one of you guys' discussions on Star Trek
I'm
Discovery.
So sorry.
Don't be, because in all honesty, as I said, I'm starting up Sinful Analysis, and for the most part, I'm going to be talking about movies. Every once in a while, a TV show is going to slip in there as well.
Okay.
My pilot episode for Sinful Analysis is going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery.
Okay.
Because when you guys had the guys from Trek Yards, I believe,
yeah.
on, I think I even texted you while I was listening to it, and I'm like, I'm loving this. Because I disagree with everything you guys are saying.
Okay.
And hearing you guys and be like, I don't agree with you at all.
Right.
Solidified my position
well,
on
sometimes
that show.
You hear that, you know? An argument that you're not cool with, or there's something about it, you're like,
right.
I don't agree with that whatsoever. And all of a sudden, it like you crystallizes what
right.
you actually think about a certain subject.
Right. And I think it was one of the guys from Trek Yards made a comment about Michael Burnham, something that I thought was... And I don't even remember specifically what it was, but I thought it was one of the more clever errist. Was that too many errs?
That's a lot of errs.
Yeah. Parts of the show. So, just for the record, Aaron, this is my script.
Holy shit. That's a lot of words.
Yeah, that's probably going to be a good 20 to 25 minute episode, but I think that this show had a lot to say.
So you're going to do like a hardcore history kind of thing.
Almost like a hardcore history, only with pretty pictures and visual aids. It's going to mix a lot of comedy, but I'm going to go deep into this show, and I'm going to be talking about the narrative structure.
Nice.
I've got some interesting nuggets of history that both you and Duncan and honestly the internet at large helped me dig up that I thought was quite awesome and also applied to the narrative and the way I chose to view this show.
Gotcha.
I think that Star Trek Discovery has a lot more going for it than the sum of its parts. More.
Absolutely. And if it capitalized it, I just think they had a hard time finding their footing.
Oh yes.
And
hard time maintaining their audience.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. I do fear for the future of this show.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think that CBS handled it completely wrong in North America. Because remember, it's also on Netflix worldwide.
Free everywhere else.
Yeah. I think that in
Paraguay, it's completely free.
Right.
I'm moving to Paraguay.
I'm just saying for the North American market, I feel like on the business side, it handled it wrong.
Yeah.
On the show side... I think it is probably the most brilliant Star Trek iteration I have ever seen because of how different it is. And if you want, and I'm just throwing this out there, once I release that video for it,
mm-hmm.
feel free to have me back on and I will defend my thesis.
Okay. I think it has a lot of promise. And for a first season of anything, it's always rocky. The only ones that actually were ever any good for first season is the original series. You know, Next Gen, kind of rough. Deep Space Nine, kind of rough. Voyager, kind of rough. Enterprise was never that great anyway.
Yeah, but it had the Bacula. It had the Quantum Leap.
It did have the Bacula. So for a first season, it's pretty decent. So, this episode, we are talking about the next gen episode, Who Watches the Watchers. And the reason
Such a fun title.
It is a great one. It's, I think it's supposed to be from a Latin phrase, but I don't know Latin, so I don't know. Anyways, I picked it because, we are both huge Twin Peaks fans.
Oh. So the gum you like is going to come back in style.
It is coming back in style. And Ray Wise is obviously plays Leland Palmer in Twin Peaks, and he does a fantastic job in Twin Peaks.
He does.
And Ray Wise plays a prominent part in this episode.
I like to think that Leland Palmer is actually who Ray Wise is portraying in God's Not Dead Part 2. When he plays a lawyer for the ACLU. I'm convinced that that's actually Leland Palmer.
It could be.
Because there's so many scenes where he just has that laughter on his face.
How about... Oh man. Some of the scenes he does. Like the scene where he has the golf club and... He's turned away from Agent Dale Cooper, and he's talking to him in the changes of his emotions, where he's crying and then he's smiling like demonically.
Yep.
And then he's laughing. Yep. And then he goes, oh, it's so like
the crying turns into not just a laugh, but a chuckle of glee, yeah. Almost giddy like. Yeah. And to see his face go from despair to maniacal menace.
Oh, it's just...
Oh, my God.
It's frightening and also genius at the same time. So,
couldn't agree with you more.
Unfortunately, this Ray Wise, we get him covered in makeup.
We do.
And we don't get any close-ups really too much. I mean, a few shots closer to his
face. Yeah, there's a few mid-shots.
But we don't get that range of emotions. A few medium shots, We don't get those range of emotions. But we get the manic...
Yes.
Stressed-out Ray Wise. So,
yes.
So Ray Wise, in this episode,
we get Ray Wise that could start randomly dancing with a couple in the middle of a country club. That's what we get. We don't get golf club Ray Wise. We get dancing Ray Wise.
Right, right. Ray Wise is the Lico. That's the name of his character in this episode.
Right. Interesting tidbit about him. Without chemicals, he points. Non-Twin Peaks fans are not going to find that funny. I am so sorry. I'm tanking your Star Trek show.
So we are not talking about Twin Peaks, and we will be talking about Twin Peaks later on in the Nerdonomicon.
Yes.
So if you do want to do a crossover to Twin Peaks, we will be talking about that. But right now we are talking about Next Generation, Who Watches the Watchers. This episode is Season 3, Episode 4, first aired on October 16th, 1989.
God,
that's
damn.
A long time ago.
Damn.
Yeah.
My sister was only like 2 months old. My wife was a year old.
Damn.
I was 4.
I don't even want to tell you how old I was.
I was actually watching Next Gen at that point. Shit. I might have seen this when it was actually on air. That's back when I used to watch it with my dad.
I was in high school. All right.
he says as he grimaces.
All right. So, episode starts off that there's an observation post with studying the Mentonkans. They're sort of a Vulcan humanoid in a Bronze Age level, and
proto Vulcan.
Now you've listened to the show. You are aware of the Prime Directive.
Yes.
So, Directive number one of Starfleet and the Federation:
first, do no harm.
That, but also don't interfere with.
Any other
pre-war civilizations.
Precisely.
This happens all the fucking time.
That people fuck with the Prime Directive? You mean like in the pilot of Discovery?
Yes.
The first 5 minutes of Discovery?
Yes. They're always messing with the Prime Directive, and they're always making that mistake. It's sometimes, like in this episode, it's not intentional, but it happens.
Right.
And so, but we'll get into that more. So, they have this holographic wall on the planet where these scientists are studying this Bronze Age civilization. Unfortunately, they have some kind of power issue, and they only have 3 hours of power. Enterprise is speeding at warp 7. When they're talking to the leader there, Dr. Baron, he Munchausen.
I wasn't going to do it. I purposely wasn't going to do
it. Beautiful ladies.
You just took it there.
Beautiful ladies.
I opened my mouth to say it too, but I'm like,
Munchausen.
I'm going to come across as a dick on this show. I'm going to let that one slide.
Right. I went there anyways. I don't have Dave to say crazy things, so I have to.
Ice spit.
I know. You know, Vanilla Ice was in town.
Was he really?
Yeah, like two or three. No, about a week ago.
Yeah. Why?
He was touring.
Why?
And I guess he only has the two songs, Rap Ninja and Ice Ice Baby. So I know, yeah. Dave should have gone.
Yeah.
I'm your number one fan.
Mostly because I know you and Metallica. And interestingly, I'm upset by Drake. Out of everything, when Holly was getting ready to leave, because I believe your listeners know she's moving cross country. We missed Holly terribly. But
Holly!
But when I was over at her house saying my goodbyes, I ran up to her and I had it queued up on my phone. I'm like, I figured out how I want to say how I'm feeling about you leaving. Yeah. She's like, what's that? And I just hit the play button. I'm upset. 50,000 on my disrespect. And David starts singing along.
Wow.
I'm like,
how do you
really?
Know this
is not Metallica or Vanilla Ice,
so
dude.
How do you know this?
It took me by surprise, but fair enough.
He's a classic Drake fan.
I'm fine with it. So am I.
Oh, okay.
I love me some Degrassi.
Okay. So, we're back at this this observation place, and while they're in communication with Picard and the Enterprise, it just blows up.
Yeah.
And just people are like flying out windows and shit like that. So, so Picard has this moment of shock, and then. He just orders him go to warp 9.
Wasn't it warp 11?
No, warp 9.
Oh, well,
yeah. They never really go past warp 9. Warp 11 is
ludicrous speed.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, basically. So then we move on to the Enterprise. Gets to the planet. The away team beams down. They start obviously doing repairs. Crusher's there, and she's helping out the victims of the explosion. And while they're down there, we get Ray Wise, Liko's character, and his daughter, Oji, and they are walking in the direction of the observation. Mm. And while they're coming towards it, the hologram that protects the observation area gets turned off, and they can see it. And they're like, well, what the hell is that? And they go to check it out. So Liko, the father, climbs up the steep hills, rocky terrain, to see it. And when he's looking in, he sees was it Data or is it Riker? I can't remember.
It was Riker.
And he's like, whoa, and then he falls backwards and he falls down the hill and makes this, I don't know, it's probably, you know, good 100 feet drop.
Easy. Easy.
You know, on the rocks.
Yep.
So that guy is gonna die.
He hurt.
Yeah, he hurt bad. So Crusher runs down to save him, and she has a medical emergency and beams them up. So all the people from with Liko, the father, and Crusher, and the scientists all beamed up, except for one of the scientists who jumped out the window and just ran away.
Like you do.
In the caves.
Yep. Because fun times, I yes. guess?
Well, when the father gets beamed up with Crusher, the daughter, Oji, sees them disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, whoa, what's going on? So this is, remember, this is Bronze Age people. So they. Yeah.
What else are you supposed to think except for?
Like, you know, the gods came and took my father.
Precisely.
So.
Then he turned into a bull and raped my mother.
Hence the Minotaur.
So remember I was talking about God's not dead.
Yeah, God's not dead.
Well, Kevin Sorbo was in that, so. It all comes together.
I guess it does.
So, don't make sense. Chemtrails are real.
Come on. This is Synthaholics. We don't talk about that shit.
I'm joking.
I know. I'm just joking, too. Back on the Enterprise, Crusher is obviously treating everybody, but Picard walks in and goes, all of a sudden, he's like, hey, everyone's getting fixed, and who the hell is that guy? Ray Wise, Liko, sitting on the table.
I swear to God, so far before Jane Silent Bob, but I felt like Jason Mewes said the line. It's like, what the hell happened to that guy's head?
Totally.
Who the fuck's that guy?
So I know. It's like, who put those buns on his head? Obviously, Picard's upset. Liko is a citizen of that planet, an alien that should not be aboard the Enterprise. And so this is breaking the Prime Directive. And Crusher's like, don't worry, he's asleep. I just have to fix him. And then he brings up, we can wipe his memories. And she's kind of skeptical. She's like, I don't know if I can do it because he's got some kind of like lipid levels or something like that. They're totally off. It wasn't lipids because that's your cholesterol, but that doesn't make any sense.
Essentially, they're talking about flashy thing in him.
Okay.
Men in Black.
I know. Anyways, after they fix the father, Liko, he's beamed back to the planet. He wakes up, and he calls out for his daughter, Oji. Oji shows up, and they're like, I can't believe what happened. And he tells her that the Picard is a god, and they're, saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
So when he finds out that Liko, like I said, Liko goes to their village or whatever you want to call them, their town center, to tell everybody what he's seen, what he observed. Right. At the same time, strangely enough, the scientist who is missing, his name is Palmer.
Hell yeah!
Which is your last name, and Leland Palmer, which is really weird.
It really is. It makes me uncomfortable all the time.
It's kind of...
Yeah, Brooke from time to time still threatens to name our next kid Leland if I don't fly straight. I'm like, please don't do that.
No!
She's like, yeah, that got that constant grin off your face real fucking quick, didn't it?
Don't put it on!
Although she's never once threatened to name a daughter Laura, so that's a positive.
No. Mm-mm. No, it's never happening. Never happening. Anyways, so when they find out that they have to find this Dr. Palmer down on the planet, Riker and Troy volunteered to have themselves altered to look like the Mentonkins, to come down on the planet and kind of like do a little seek or what not seek and destroy. What's the other one? Reconnaissance.
Recon mission.
Yeah, recon mission to find them and hopefully, bring them back. While they're down there in their town squares, obviously Liko is telling everybody about the Picard and they're like, oh God, you've really... we've really contaminated this culture with
religion.
Well, religion, but also just the idea that, we've let ourselves be known to them. So at this point, right when they're like, oh, it's really bad, all of a sudden they find the Dr. Palmer. He gets dragged in, this guy who was never conscious, actually, through the whole episode.
Yeah.
You could have just been a mannequin. He really wasn't.
I gotta wonder what his rate was for that episode.
I know. It's like just play a guy who's asleep technically the whole time.
We'll give you $25 and there's craft services.
Yeah, right. And
I lived out in LA. I would have taken that deal.
Riker has to carry you once in a while. Or a stunt double.
So. I would have been fine with that. I like me some Riker.
He was a really skinny guy. I noticed that, too. So this is, going good for Riker.
Yeah.
So he doesn't, have to carry some guy. Especially in the desert.
It's like, God damn it.
God damn it. Anyways. So when they find this Dr. Palmer, they was like, yeah, that's the one they're looking for. Liko's like, the Picard is looking for him. And this corroborates his story. Mm-hmm. That they're looking for the Palmer and stuff. And then they don't know what to do with this Palmer. And, they should tie him up and stuff like that. This is when they decide to make a distraction to get Palmer out. So Riker and Troy make a distraction by Troy saying, I found somebody else that's, like these people. And everyone runs out to go check it out. And while they're all run out, Riker steals Palmer and ties up the old man.
Mm-hmm.
Old man, tell me about the old ways.
tie them up. Well, in my day, we used to wear shoes and hats.
You tie an onion to your belt. That meant you were interested in a girl.
We used to walk 15 miles to school.
Back in my day, we walked 20 miles.
Uphill, both ways.
Old people are always trying to outdo themselves. So if you ever talk like more than one old people in a room, they're always outdoing.
Oh,
like,
God, yeah.
No, we did, you know.
It's like Deadpool and his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Constantly. It's like, we always had to wear one condom. We had to share the condom around.
Yeah.
Yeah, my house always had people living
you
in
know what?
You had a house?
That's a Monty Python skit.
Is it really?
It's really funny, too, how they say how poor it was, how they were, and they used to live, like, in a shoebox, and they were so poor and stuff like that. It just got worse and worse. And they were like, you know, how they would never be able to eat anything because they were always hungry and stuff like that. So, very fun listening to old people try to outdo each other.
Yes. I don't know what else to say.
We should have had more old people because they've been great too. Like, no, the old people, the old ways, the old gods would say whatever. Anyways,
I love how you just punt that. You get all the way to old gods and you're like, I'm going to punt that way.
I don't know.
I didn't have the joke.
I didn't have the joke. I was just thinking about it. Just like
I was hoping something would come to me. I'm just getting out of there.
Nothing. Yep. Anyway, so Picard ties up the old guy. They go running. The guy with the bow goes chasing Riker, trying to chase him down. And Riker gets away very slowly and gets into a little crevice and he gets beamed up with Palmer. Unfortunately, they realize Troy was baiting them out so they could steal Palmer.
Right.
And they now have Troy and they are holding her responsible until they find Riker and Palmer, which they don't know have beamed up. This is where Leeko, the father, starts basically thinking like, well, maybe the Picard is angry and he's, you know, and there's a storm overhead and possibly, you know, we should, he wants us to take, vengeance out on, Troy.
Because Ray Wise can never be in a show without a thunderstorm.
Or be completely deranged.
Exactly. And can you say religious excitation?
Yes.
Can you say it three times fast?
No, I can't even say that word. So, so he wants to. So basically, he's upset, obviously, that they can't that Riker stole Palmer, and he's also upset that the storm has come, and he's become more and more paranoid. During that time, they've up on the Enterprise. They discuss what their options are. And they're saying, like, the damage is done.
Right.
They know about us or they're aware of us and they're putting you as a god. So Picard decides to take their leader and when she's away from everyone else, Nuria, to beam her up and try to convince her that she isn't, that he isn't a god.
Right.
And this is a fascinating part where he brings her up and he kind of walks her through the logical steps of,
I believe his quote was, to show her how the magic works.
Yes.
Right.
But I found it's like, you know, I'm flesh and blood. You know, we're just like you. You know, we once lived in huts and now we build ships. And, you know, all those things. And I like the logical jumps they went through all that. And it was kind of just interesting to see her process it. And then she realizes that, okay. And then the final thing is because she asks him, can you bring back some dead children that died, I think, in a storm or something last year? He says, that's not our power. And he was like, you don't understand. You haven't understand anything.
Yep.
Because you know, he says, I can't bring back the dead. And she was saying to him, have I angered you in some way, you know, that you wouldn't do that for me?
Right.
And then when she finally sees that Dr. Barron's, I think that's his wife, passes away from her injuries from the explosion on the observation thing.
Then she gets
She realizes that there's just some things that, you know, the Star Trek people can't do. So anyway so during that time like I said, down on the planet, Leeko is getting more and more deranged. He's thinking that Picard, the thunderstorms overhead is a sign that Picard is angry, and he decides he's going to take his arrow and shoot Troy. Right at the point when he's about to shoot her, takes the arrow and ready to take her out, Picard walks in with Nuria.
Mm-hmm.
He's convinced Nuria that he's not a god, but if Leeko is not convinced. And during Picard says, basically, if it takes that you have to shoot me, you know, then so be it, to prove that I'm not a god. And Leeko's ready to do it.
Yes, he is.
And he does shoot Picard. Fortunately, I think, was his daughter jumps at him at the last minute? It's like trying to stop him.
I believe so, yeah.
Somebody bumps him. Yep. He doesn't go straight to Picard's heart. He hits him up in the shoulder.
Yeah, up in the shoulder.
Obviously, you know, this is Star Trek. Picard's not going to die from an arrow. And they send him. He gets all patched up by Crusher. And he comes back to the planet and basically says, you know, we were observing you. This is we find, you know, people at your stage of evolution of culture interesting, because that teaches us about ourselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we want you to do your own thing. So
right,
and it's kind of a nice ending. Just he kind of explains it, and even Leeko kind of understands that he was acting, jumping on impulses and not going on any information. So
precisely.
So really interesting, and the show wraps up from there. So Robbie, you're my guest. What did you think about this episode of Next Generation?
I thought this episode was really intense. I had a couple of points that I had written down that I wanted to touch on. The first one that I remember right off the top of my head is, maybe it is my own perception. Mm-hmm. However, I don't remember Picard being this much of a hard ass in the entirety of the time that I watched him. Because he seemed downright pissed about the violation of the Prime Directive, up to the point where he was like, why didn't you just leave him there to die?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I get the Prime Directive. I think sometimes in the implementation that I've seen it in certain episodes of Star Trek, it is pushed to a form of extremism. Yeah, sure. I mean, the problems that we see in this episode is one of the reasons that the Prime Directive is in play.
Sure.
I mean, when you have a primitive culture like that, when they see, if I use my lighter to light up a cigarette, which I'll do right after this episode, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Somebody would make, to quote Hocus Pocus, you know, amazing Disney movie from 1995, when Max flips up the lighter, look at him, he makes fire from his hand.
Right.
What else are you supposed to think?
Right,
you don't have the tech.
Yeah.
So obviously it's magic. So I get it.
Yeah.
At the same time, in a situation like this, where you are directly responsible for the injury and potential death of people that you were merely there to observe, I find leaving that person to die to be a bit callous. And I do realize that there are some episodes that you guys have even talked about where, you know, it's basically the debate. You know, if a civilization is going to be wiped out due to disease, do we leave them?
Right.
Well, yes or no.
Right.
But what about if they're about to be wiped out due to genocide? Do we leave them?
Right.
What is really the difference? And I get that question, and I get that debate.
Right.
I have my personal opinions on one side or the other, but if you, the observer, if you are directly responsible or indirectly responsible for the injury and death of whether it be one person or a civilization, at what point do the rules need to be bent and or broken because of your direct involvement?
So I don't think this is something you don't know, but the Prime Directive is the idea.
It's potential that I don't know.
No, I'm just...
I just find it a very interesting philosophical discussion.
It is, you know? And we've actually, Dave and I have grappled with this more than once now. We did a 5-part series on the Prime Directive. At last episode, we did Dear Doctor. So we talked about this Prime Directive, and the Enterprise's before Prime Directive. But the idea that you can't possibly see all the outcomes.
Yeah, the butterfly effect.
Right.
For sure.
So, like, if a society is on the brink of extinction for one reason or another, it's not, you know, me or you couldn't possibly know the effects if you did have the secret antidote to save that extinction. You don't know what would happen to them. Could they become the next, you know, Nazis in space or something like that? You know, or right. maybe they...
A race of Gandhis.
A race of Gandhis. Maybe they are. You know, we don't know.
Precisely. I understand and agree to that. I guess my... And it's not that I'm coming down on one side or the other. I find that the way they staged the dialogue in this episode, there was quite a few derisive things that just made me think about, and like I said, I haven't come down on a conclusion, but at what point? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you may have your opinions on leaving a civilization to die of plague or of famine or of genocide. Where is the line? That was the one of the major questions and major commentaries that I took from this episode. Where is that line? Not only for the show, but for you. Right. For Aaron O'Brien or for me, Robbie Palmer.
For me.
Where is the line?
That's,
you know what I mean?
That's difficult, and that's the hard point. So, like, Star Trek obviously throws out, like, if it's pre-warp, you don't touch that shit. So it's basically like, you know, we have laws about, you know, like, when you can engage in sexual activity, you know, at certain ages, you just don't do it.
Precisely.
Are some people more probably ready for sexual activity at certain ages? Possibly, but that's not for you to decide. We've set that law. And the idea that, you know, like, this was accidental breaking of the, you know, of like, of the Prime Directive. They didn't know.
Right. And I can't really use a parallel with that. Like, oh, I tripped, fell, and landed in her pussy. You know, I can't exactly.
Well, you could say that she lied. That happens.
That's a good point. That's a good point. All right. She lied. She looked 18, officer, I swear.
And that does happen. And I'm not saying that's right either, but I'm saying that that does happen to people. And then they find out, and all of a sudden you're in a sexual offender's list.
Right.
It does happen.
Yes, it does.
Now, that doesn't make it right, and we've come down pretty hard on that. And so, basically, what people have decided to do, if you were in right mind, is that if somebody seems like they're too young, they probably are too young.
Right.
And maybe you should find somebody your own age.
Right.
So, but that being said, the Prime Directive, if they're pre-warp, they're just little children.
Yes.
You don't touch those little children.
You don't do it.
You just move on.
You don't do it.
You just move on.
So, Leland Plum fell down. He got a hurtsy noggin. You just leave him right there.
You just leave him dead.
You just little Leland Plum. You just little Leland Plum.
But it's excruciating.
Yes.
And as me and Dave talk back, and this was obviously Enterprise, the Prime Directive wasn't in place at that point. Because that wasn't a law at that point. But if you could help a civilization, why wouldn't you? And my argument too is when we did the five-part series on the Prime Directive, my big thought was societies have, aliens or whatever, when they evolve on a planet, they have a certain arc. So, you know, from, you know, when they're Stone Age to Bronze Age into, you know, Modern Age and into
Enlightenment, Warp.
All that stuff.
Precisely.
They have an arc. And then sooner or later, the society will go into extinction one way or the other. Just how long that will happen, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But so all those arcs are is a natural occurring thing. If it's disease, if, you know, we talk about our civilization on this earth, you know, we have gates of or impediments of, you know, disease, nuclear annihilation, ecological annihilation,
right.
All these things that we may never get off this planet, and our race may never live to a certain point because we're stuck, because we can't get past our own problems.
But we're going to have a space force.
Yes, we will have space force. So that being said, is like, that's understandable that some races might go extinct.
Yes.
And that's a natural arc of things. But if you're part of the Federation on the Enterprise and you fly to that planet, are you not part of the natural universe?
Ooh, that's a good question.
And are you not part of the universe and your own decision to go to that planet and find that planet,
mm-hmm.
help it or not help it, that's part of the universe itself too. Right. So if you can cure that disease, that plague that's killing all those people, and help them out of that time of extinction.
Right. That's another way of looking at it. Wouldn't you think that that is your responsibility to do so?
Right.
To better the lives. Although, like you said, sometimes you end up with Hitler, sometimes you end up with Gandhi.
Right.
And that's why Doctor Who has always fascinated me so much as well. Because one of the arcs of Doctor Who is certain events are always time-locked.
Yeah, and you can't change them.
Precisely. Yeah. I'm specifically thinking about the episode with Vesuvius. It was in the Donna season with David Tennant, mm-hmm. Dr.
Yep,
Ten.
I remember.
And he belligerently tells her, no, this event is time-locked. Vesuvius will fall. Mm-hmm. This is time-locked. And Donna pleads with him, can't you just save these people? They helped us. They helped us. Can't you just save these people?
Yeah.
And they leave. Mm-hmm. But then at the last moment, they come back and David Tennant's doctor, he says, just this one time, just this one instance, I can save you. Mm-hmm. Vesuvius will fall. Your population will always be remembered.
Right.
They're all going to die. But you, I can save.
Right.
Because ultimately, in the broad scheme of things, these people, for the most part, they'll add up to nobody.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But there's still a human life.
Right.
And in this instance, and then in this time,
yeah.
I can save you. I can interrupt to him, to his point, his prime directive,
right.
if you will,
right.
just this once.
Right.
You know, and that episode always stuck with me for multiple reasons, considering the fact that Peter Capaldi becomes one of the next incarnations of Doctor Who.
Sure.
And if you follow that rabbit hole for, you know, the idea that he might subconsciously choose his next forms, I think that that character and that interaction
mm-hmm.
stuck with him so that that was his
back.
New visage.
He goes back, right.
Precisely. But, I mean, that's a whole nother intellectual property. But my point is it lends itself to still come back to the question, and I don't think it's anything you and I can solve.
No, we can't solve it.
But it's the question that's fascinating.
Yeah.
When is it okay?
Right.
When is it your responsibility to help because of your actions?
Right.
And when is it your responsibility to adhere
right,
to the
right.
prime directive.
So strangely enough, during the prime directive, I thought Kirk was going to be the biggest person to break all the, because Kirk kind of flies by the seat of his pants.
Yeah. Homeboy's kind of a rogue.
Kirk did break a lot. Kirk did break a lot.
Homeboy's also kind of a slut.
Yeah, she is. Picard a few times broke the prime directive. Janeway a lot. Sisko, I don't think he ever broke the prime directive. From what I can recall, when we talked about it. If there were any prime directives, it wasn't really. But
I think I've seen DS9 probably the least out of any of the iterations of Star Trek.
It's Dave Duncan's favorite.
I'm aware.
Yeah. He tells me every time I see him.
Basically. It's like,
Deep Space Nine!
It's basically, The Last Jedi sucks! Deep Space Nine is awesome! Star Trek rules!
That's kind of his intro when he walks into a room.
Basically.
Yeah.
It's like, hi, Duncan.
Yeah.
I'm just fucking... But, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Isn't DS9 basically just a space station? I mean, do they actually go to other planets?
Yeah,
or is that
do.
Basically just like a hub? Because that would be a cool series.
It was
just a hub.
It is a hub, but they have a wormhole, a stable wormhole right by the station that goes to the opposite side of the galaxy. And it's always there. And it goes to, you know, which you couldn't get any easy to get there. But the idea is that there's an evil empire race called the Dominion. And they're pretty insane.
The Dominion Wars.
Yeah, right. So,
the Daleks of Star Trek, if you will.
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know.
I always call the Borg. Well, Borg would be sort of the Cybermen, but
that parallel I could get. I don't know. I don't know the gentleman. So.
I want to bring up a couple interesting points for this episode, which I thought you might find interesting. So Ray Wise, we know, plays Leland Palmer, but he was also we talked about him earlier in a past episode, which was Hope and Fear Voyager. He played Arcturus, he was another alien.
Right, right, right.
So, and that
I didn't know that until I listened to you guys' show, by the way.
Right, well, it was cool. So he's in two, we get Ray Wise twice. So that's our episode 169, Hope and Fear. Another thing, really interesting. I think you're going to find this fascinating. Pamela Siegel plays Ogie, the daughter. Do you have any idea who she is?
That name sounds extremely familiar, but no.
Well, she got married and changed her name to Pamela Adelon, and she voices Bobby Hill from King of the Hill.
Really?
Yeah. She's in a ton of other stuff.
Oh, damn.
She's a big voice actor, actress or actor.
Right.
So I said King of the Hill. She was in Californication.
That was a good show.
And she was a writer and producer on Louis C.K. show, and she won tons of awards for her writing there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
damn.
So she's really, and it's funny because when you look up all the stuff that she's done, Star Trek doesn't come up. But she it must have been like she was in earlier roles. Oh, and she's from Albany, New York.
Oh, New Yorker represent.
Yeah. So. I thought, I was like, wow. I was like, who is this girl? I started looking through all the people. I mean, there's a couple other people there that are here, but there's nobody that would be recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I want to bring up, the location of the Metonkin, you know, the desert, the rocky terrain. This is called the Vasquez Rocks, which is in California. Very famous. So if Trek people will know that this is particularly famous for the arena where Kirk fights the Green Gorn, the lizard guy.
Oh, dude, iconic. Even if you're not a Trek fan, yeah, you know that scene.
So, but you,
for sure.
So that was also the episode Alternative Factor, Friday's Child. Also, it was the Vulcan scene in The Voyage Home, Star Trek IV. Also was used on Star Trek Voyager Initiations Gravity and the Vulcan scenes in the 2009 J.J. Abrams reboot.
Damn.
Now, but not only was it used in this location, but there's other tons of other things. The Bonanza, Maverick, Gunsmoke used this. The Wild Wild West, Kung Fu.
Kung Fu.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Movie Alien or Nation. Show?
I'm sure it's a show.
God, I love that show.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just a ton. Just crazy. So CSI. So this area is really popular for filming.
Oh, my God.
So, just cool little tidbit that I was like this. Because I was like, boy, this location.
I find that so interesting. That is really cool.
There's a lot of all these different shows that they would go in. So, yeah. So this is a fun episode. I love Ray Wise.
I do too.
I
think he's a great actor. Extremely underrated.
Underrated. Plays a lot of bit parts.
He does.
Like you said, he was in Lucifer. Not Lucifer. The other one where he plays the devil. Damn it! Why can't I think of it? I can't remember the episode. The show right now. It was a show where he plays the devil.
Yeah, there was. It's definitely not Lucifer.
No, it's not Lucifer
at all.
I'm something like that, but like Satan and me.
Yeah, that might have been it. He also plays Robin Scherbatsky's father, the second iteration of her father. The first time you see him, it's someone completely different. But he does play Robin Scherbatsky's father in How I Met Your Mother, and I think he's great in that. Ray Wise is, you said it best, he's a great character actor. He does a lot of bit parts. I feel that he's extremely underrated.
Mm-hmm.
He has, just because I've seen a lot of things with him in it, mm-hmm. and the nuances that he has in his acting style, I'm not saying that he is as good, but I'm saying that he is in the same ballpark as the late, great Michael Parks, mm-hmm. as far as underrated actors that just put in phenomenal performances.
My issue with him more than anything is that he seems to just take about any job.
Fair.
Like, hey, we got a job for you. All right, I'll do it.
Fair.
It's spreading mulch in my front yard. I'll do it.
That's a bit more on the Nick Cage side of things.
No, but it's like honestly, anything is just the craziest shit that he's just like, you know, like, why did you say yes to that movie? You could have done. I mean, you were literally like one of the most iconic figures for Twin Peaks, one of the seminal TV shows in television history, and you pick like these just totally throwaway.
It's so much that you have to cock your head to the side and say, "Why did you?
Why'd you do that?"
Yeah, I mean, I've already referenced it. God's Not Dead 2. And I'm like, Ray Wise? Melissa Joan Hart, I get. Ray Wise?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I've never seen that, so I would.
Don't.
Yeah.
Don't.
I don't plan on
it. I hate watched it.
Yeah, you hate watched it.
And then I hated myself for hate watching it. There was a lot of hate.
A couple showers afterward.
And it's one of those religious complex movies. Which brings me to another thing that I wanted to bring up. It was a very, very small conversation, but I found it to be very interesting because I don't know much religious conversation in the universe of Star Trek.
Yeah.
I found it very interesting, Picard's condemnation of religion when he was discussing going down there and pretending to be a god to get his people out of there. I found that to be very interesting because he immediately goes toward crusades and jihads and inquisitions and whatnot without a set of codified laws, and he refuses under no circumstances to play the part in any way, shape, or form.
So you should put on a robe and a, you know, like a beard.
I'm not advocating for that.
I'm God, Nico.
I'm not advocating for that. I am, however, saying that I find it to be very interesting, the direct parallel that he makes in that conversation. And I'm not over here, you know, arguing, oh, there should be more God in the Star Treks. Not whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I find it interesting when religion is brought up in IP, whether it be fantasy, sci-fi, and whatnot, and most of the time I find it to be the most interesting when it's a made-up religion. Like in Game of Thrones, you know, you have the religion of the Seven, you've got the religion of the Dothraki. I find it interesting to see how it is created. But the fascinating part was how he immediately goes toward the negative, when that's more associated with fanaticism as opposed to the peaceful way to live a codified... Yeah, a codified set of laws toward a peaceful life.
So... I don't know yet if Gene Roddenberry had passed away in, by season three. I can't remember, but it was...
I mean, he's a well-known atheist.
He was an atheist, and although they don't come out and necessarily bash all religion, because obviously Deep Space Nine has religion in it with the Bajoran faith, and I know there's other ones. I mean, like this episode is obviously touches on faith, and we and they talk about religion here and there. I think the idea is that when you foul a god like a Picard, just there's no knowing what could be what the god could want. So Leko's down there, and it's thunder and lightning, but it's not thunder and lightning season.
Precisely. I mean, it's very obvious that the way they're referring to the Picard, at least to me, I've done a lot of studying of religion, especially in my younger collegiate life. So I've read the Bible cover to cover no less than five or six times. I've read the Quran. I've read the Torah. I've read the 12 tables. I mean, I've researched many different religions just because I found it fascinating. You know what I mean? It seemed much more that their belief structure was set up under polytheistic ideals as opposed to monotheistic. Because in ancient Sumeria, ancient Greece, Rome, and stuff like that, yes, you had the pantheon, you know, Zeus, Athena, Aphrodite. But something that is not as well known, I mean, it's known, but not as well known in common knowledge, is that many, many, many city-states had patron gods. They believed in Athena, they believed in Aphrodite, but their god of their town or their province, the one that they prayed to, happened to be Poseidon, because they're a fishing town. So whenever anything bad happens, you know, a thunderstorm comes, we pissed off Poseidon. Old man Jimmy fucked the sheep, it was Poseidon. The sheep fucked Jimmy, it was Poseidon. And now there's Sheep Man running around.
Right.
Build a model airplane, says the Sheep Man. So I found it to be... And also, I mean, so Picard was validated, too, because immediately, with the fear and everything like that, it went...
He got shot by an arrow.
Exactly. It went immediately to religious excitation. And I'm not condemning the conversation. I just found it interesting that that's immediately where his brain went, was the negative side of that, as opposed to... helping them in some way, shape, or form set up a codified set of laws to try to get them out, while maybe even taking on the guys for a moment.
I'm going to just jump in and say, so I don't think them setting up a codified laws and handing it down, like, you know, here's, you know, you know, God with Moses giving
with these 15, excuse me,
10
commandments.
I don't think they wanted to masquerade as anybody with any moral authority.
Fair. Fair.
Although they may have had better moral authority on certain ethical ways of looking at things, but they weren't going to impose their views on them. Especially with the Federation, they don't believe that they should culturally do that.
Which makes all the sense in the world.
So, yeah, so I don't think they wanted to masquerade any further. I do think... I'm curious, because you said earlier that you were, because you brought up polytheism compared to monotheism, and did you do you believe that there is a better, do you believe monotheism has a superiority to polytheism?
Not necessarily. However, in the Bronze Age of this particular civilization, the gods that they worshipped in most of the ancient polytheistic religions, with the possible exception of the North, with the of the Norse gods, tended to be much more vengeful and wrathful.
Okay,
for the most part. I mean, yes, you can point to the Old Testament,
especially
The Book of Leviticus, if anything else.
Yeah.
That being said,
you scratch your nuts the wrong way. Thunder and lightning.
You wear clothes made of two different fabrics. We're stoning you to death, bitch.
Yeah.
All football players are dead. All of them.
Yeah.
You and I both work on the Sabbath. We're burned at the stake.
Oh man.
So, I mean, I'm not discounting that. What I am saying, however, is that in the ancient polytheistics of old, Sumerian gods, you know what I mean? Many of which have been reappropriated for movies like, The Exorcism. Like, Pazuzu was a true god that was prayed to in Assyria. I'm not saying a true god, but you know what I mean? It was a god that was being prayed to.
Yeah.
Lots of these gods were far more wrathful, and they equated thunder and lightning and blights on the crops with those polytheistic gods far more through anthropological studies that I happen to have read than they did during the times of monotheistic gods.
But don't you think that only changed, monotheism really only changed with the coming of, you know, the figure of Jesus Christ?
Not true. It started out with Judaism.
No, I just meant that all of a sudden we've, instead of the wrathful God per se,
yes, you got, yes, yes,
love your neighbors as you love yourself and turn the other cheek kind of thing.
Yeah, totally.
Where,
fair.
Where you didn't have that before. I mean, Israel and the 12 tribes left Egypt and they basically kicked ass all the way into when they got into, you know, their to Israel.
Absolutely fair. There's really no evidence to support my thesis on that. It's just something that I just kind of felt, because it's kind of the way the culture and the times happened to look. Maybe it was also the filters. It reminded me of, like, old episodes of Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, and Xena, the Warrior Princess. Maybe that's what my brain went to. So maybe I'm talking out of my ass here, but that's
They probably filmed it at Valquez Rock, so you were probably like...
Probably.
Like, why is Hercules showing up?
Oh my god, do I hear bagpipes? So, I mean, it's totally a possibility. And I also want to apologize. I don't want your listeners to be like, oh, why is this motherfucker arguing for more religion in Star Wars? I'm not.
Star Trek, by the way.
No. So I just find it to be interesting. Some of the nuances in the dialogue, specifically.
We try to get into any of these topics, and I'm happy always to talk about them, because I think these are important things. And I think Star Trek evokes that all the time. That's the one beautiful thing about Star Trek, and as simple and little cheesy as this episode might be with the guy with the freaking buns on his forehead, it makes you think. You're like, okay, so, like, you know, I'm, you know, you're thinking about religion. I'm thinking ancient aliens, you know, all that kind of shit that, you know, it evokes those things. And then you think about interference from a culture. Like when we talked about the Prime Directive in our five-part series, I brought to Dave's attention the idea of the cargo cults, where in World War II, there was all these islands where these very, maybe Bronze Age, but very primitive people were living on these islands, never disturbed by too many people. Americans would show up and would give them things, and they would pray to the Americans to come back and bring them more things. So, I mean, this is, the Americans were viewed as gods.
Cortez and the Aztecs.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly.
You know, the Aztecs laid down, or kneeled down and worshipped Cortez as a god.
Right.
And he rode right over them.
Well, I mean, he was a pretty mean guy.
Oh dear God, yes. Oh dear God, yes. So, I'm just saying that they saw these men on horses, which they'd not seen, you know, armor and stuff like that. They thought that the men and the horse were one. They thought that they were like centaurs and shit like that.
Yeah, right, right.
Nah, dude, it's a douchebag on a horse with a weird-looking helmet.
Which is cool.
It is. I prefer Balboa. He was just hanging out in what's now Florida looking for the Fountain of Youth.
Yeah, yeah.
Poking alligators with a stick. It's fun.
Stick them in the eye.
Are those Mickey ears? What the fuck?
But I just, I think that religion for Star Trek is I don't think they've ever said you can't have a personal belief, because obviously when we see the Bajorans are even brought in Next Gen, like I think the last two seasons, and we get an idea that they have a faith. Mm-hmm. Or something to that nature. And then it's really explored during Deep Space Nine.
Right.
So we do see a religion. And we see touch of religions here and there throughout the thing. And I think they just try to be respectful for the religion, but it's never like Picard never says, you know, I'm a Lutheran or whatever. You know, like he just never comes out and says anything.
I am a Mormon.
I am a Mormon. Number one, prepare my underwear.
I don't even know why that was so funny to me.
I don't know either. Anyways.
But it worked.
But, so we don't really get it. And the original series, we do see it. There's a chapel in the Enterprise where he's about to marry a young couple. Kirk is about to marry a young couple. And then it gets, you know, the Romulans attack. And
they do.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Goddamn Romulans. But yeah, so religion is interesting topic, and I think this one basically goes into the idea that religion, even with the laws, I mean, let's even take, I mean, Christianity, really gets stretched to a point where it's like, that's not really Christian. You're just kind of being an asshole.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, I
totally agree with you. 100%.
My viewpoint in religion at this point is that I'm agnostic. There could be something out there that's powerful and, you know, all-knowing, but I don't really know if any organized religion really has it all figured out.
I totally agree with you. That's why I love the movie Dogma so much.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, whatever God is, I don't think it's anything... If there is a God, mm-hmm. I don't think there is anything that we could comprehend or understand.
Absolutely not.
And I have always been having an issue with people who come and try to tell you what God wants. And it's like, it's kind of difficult because even the Bible is a conglomeration of the Mosaic text, which, you know, has been interpreted, a zillion times, and then the books that follow, and then the Gospels have been translated and retranslated multiple times.
And then certain books excommunicated out of it.
The book of Judas.
Yo. The book of Thomas.
Book of Thomas, not in there.
The Gospel of Thomas.
And it's, okay, so those are the, you know, Gnostic texts, and, you know, they weren't, you know, thrown in for the Catholic Church because they didn't believe that was towing the line that they wanted. Maybe they were a little too rebellious or...
Precisely. And on top of that, whether or not... I mean, this has gone down a rabbit hole that I'll try to dig us out of really quickly. I just thought it was an interesting dialogue between Picard and the other guy. But I just... One thing I want to point out in the on the subject of religion is, even in these Gospels and everything, the word of God is all fine and whatnot, but the written down text in the Bible was written, the pen holders were all men, mm-hmm. all mortals. And once again, all men, white. Even in gender.
Well, maybe not white men, we don't know.
Yeah, true. But my point is, they're fallible.
Absolutely. And the religious argument against that is that the Holy Spirit was guiding them the whole time to write the right things. But if you look at ancient, one thing I always point out is during the Renaissance, there was a bad interpretation of the Bible where Moses has horns. Mm-hmm. And some early Renaissance statues of Moses, he has horns.
Absolutely.
They're like, oh, Moses has horns. All right. Absolutely. Chisel, chisel, chisel. This Moses has horns. So
one parallel I used when I was having this very similar discussion with one of my personal friends, not anybody in our type of world, you know, new media or anything like that, just a friend of mine that wanted to have a discussion about it. When I mentioned about the fallibility of the pen holders being mortal men, mm-hmm. was season one of Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. When Robert Baratheon's on his deathbed and he says, until my son comes of age, and Ned Stark is transcribing his last will and testament, and instead of writing my son comes of age, my rightful heir comes of age. Mm-hmm. The words, technically, if Robert was to read them, meaning what he said, the implication, knowing the truth, being something far different.
Interesting you know bring what I mean? That up because Solomon Rushdie wrote the Satanic Verses, Satanic Verses, and the premise of that was the writer taking the writings of Muhammad down, decided, what if I alter these a little bit? Will he know? Would he understand that I know that? And that, because he would give all these proclamations and talk, and then you'd read it back and just be slightly off, and more he's slightly off, so you would know that he didn't have it all right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that seed of doubt kind of thing. So
yes.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
I just don't, my personal view is I don't believe anybody really has a really good grip on what is out there, you know, and
same 100%.
I don't fault anybody for believing whatever they want to believe. Mm-hmm. If you want to believe, as long as it's not hurting anybody, you're not trying to force your views on anybody, that's fine.
But believe whatever you want to believe. Have faith. If you choose not to have faith, that's fine too. Just
don't be a dick about it.
Exactly.
Christian,
be cool with people that
Muslim,
feel
atheist,
different. You
just
know?
Don't be a dick about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially those in power that use it as a sword as opposed to a shield. Stop being a dick. You know what I mean?
I am a friend with a lot of atheists, and they get really militant about it.
Yes.
And while I can appreciate the reasons why they do, I get like, yeah, but you ain't winning anybody over. You're just hurting your cause because you're so abrasive about it. And again, I've met plenty of Christians that do the exact same thing. You're just like,
yeah,
you're like,
dude. I've met nasty motherfuckers on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, and you're just like, dude, nobody's believing in Jesus when you talk like that or when you act like that. So.
Right. My wife says that the people that tend to turn her off of religion tend to be the most religious of people.
The most zealous.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And once again, I didn't mean to fall down this religious rabbit hole. Okay. I just found the nuanced bit of dialogue to be so fascinating when they were just debating on what they were going to do to get their people out.
Yeah.
I just found that to be fascinating.
Yeah, it probably is probably more venom than I would have expected myself. But I think you're just trying to make the point that, you know, them just creating a religion off of, you know, him being Picard as God.
Mm.
Like you said, there's no written rules. There's no Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
They could just do whatever they want. And it's just up to their interpretation.
Yeah. And that's fair. And look at what ended up happening in that first altercation.
Yeah.
You know?
You got shot with
Leland Palmer, excuse me, Ray Wise. Shot Picard.
Right.
So, I mean, religious excitation is out there, and it's real. And I think that that was at the forefront of this episode, in small ways and in large.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just find some of the dialogue in Star Trek as a whole, whether it be Next Gen, the original series, Discovery, I think that there's a lot of nuance that goes into the writing, and I think that that should be praised.
Absolutely.
Because a two minutes might even be stretching it. A 2 minute debate, we've been discussing this, for 20 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
On this one minute and a half to 2 minute scene.
Yeah.
You know, so much nuance in both the writing and the acting.
And
Jean-Luc Picard should win all the awards.
But that's all the thing is that the great thing about Star Trek is they try to talk about subjects that make you think and you reflect back later at mm-hmm. some point. Go, oh, yeah, I wonder about that. Or more, it brings more thoughts. And the good Star Trek episodes are when,
you know, you're driving to work or you're doing something and that pops up in your head and you think about it again. So,
right.
And that's happened to me more than once. That's why, you know, we do this podcast. So
I find it very cool that the Orville is doing pretty much the exact same thing.
It's such a ripoff of Next Gen, though. I mean, they're doing a good job.
It is. It is. But it uses a different type of style as opposed to high drama and sci-fi drama.
Yeah, they're doing
They use like satire and comedy to drive the same points home.
Right.
To meet two different types of people, still telling a very similar story.
Right.
More power on you because the messages are so, so similar.
Yeah.
And, you know? So, and I think more of that should get out there.
Yeah, I think it's more needed today than ever.
Yeah. There's way too much fuck you and not enough listening.
Or just,
you
know what I mean? Just be reflective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Self-reflective even.
Yeah. That doesn't happen anymore. We just check Instagram.
And that's the whole reason on my show I try to dive a little bit deeper. I try to find the subtext underneath the text and highlight it and make it bold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's a lot of nuance and a lot of messages and a lot of commentary and a lot of things that have been coming out, especially in the last few years. I almost feel like there's a greater influx with it. Whoever would have thought that a little show that could on Netflix called Glow could have such a powerful...
I haven't seen Glow yet.
Oh, it's really good.
I've heard it's good.
And it's got some very powerful social commentary, especially when you look at it through the time lens of the 1980s.
Okay.
It's a very, very powerful show.
Gotcha.
And there's, just like what we were talking about on this episode, there's far more underneath the surface.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But that's what I try to do on my show as well.
Yeah.
You know, find these little pieces that I'm like... It's not really important overall to the episode, but that made me think, and I want to talk about this.
Yeah, it's good. If it made you inspire you for, you know, commentary or just even thought later on, that's what I love about a lot of Star Trek. Not all Star Trek. Some Star Trek is just stupid, but there's tons of episodes out there. So I mean, there's good and there's terrible.
You guys did the math at one point, isn't there? At this point, like over, if you watched it like straight through, no sleeping, whatnot. For one thing, you'd be dead.
Yeah.
But at least Freddy didn't get you.
Yeah.
Didn't you like go for over a month or something like that?
Yeah,
straight.
Yeah.
Like,
to be 36 Dave did days? The math or something like that. He was how many hours you'd have to be.
Why am I not surprised it was Dave doing the math?
I can't bother myself, but Dave figures these things out. I think he just lays in bed and thinks about shapes of nacelles, why, you know, certain ships have certain things and why certain shows break canon, and then, you know, calculates the time it takes to watch all the episodes out there.
I can't mock him that much because that was part of the reason I didn't like the Roseanne reboot was I'm like, but you killed off Dan. Why the fuck is he back here?
Well, that was
lazy.
Yeah, right. Oh, I'm back. Where have you been?
Nanobots I would have bought. Come on.
Well, should we wrap this episode up?
I think so, man.
All right. Well, Robbie, tell people out there where they can find you.
You can find me anywhere by Googling Nerdynomicon in Google. You can find us on Apple Podcasts.
Just go to Google.
Go to Google. Find me there. You want Facebook, facebook.com/Nerdynomicon. Once again... By the time you hear this, it's going to be up in less than a month. There's a couple of Star Trek videos on my YouTube page right now.
I encourage people to go to YouTube, go to Nerdynomicon.
Yeah, youtube.com/Nerdynomicon.
They're interesting how you process the shows and talk about them.
Well, I recorded my reactions in real time as well. I mean, the episode ended. I paused it right there on that TV right behind you, stood in front of the green screen and talked for 3 minutes.
Right.
Then sat down, watched another one, and that was way too much Star Trek to do in 2 days.
That's a lot.
Oh, my fucking God.
It's a lot of Star Trek.
But I even showed you the length of that script. I've got a big episode that's going to be kicking up Sinful Analysis, and it is Star Trek-based because I think Discovery is frankly brilliant. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Nerdynomicon Podcast.
And
new episodes every week.
And Twitter?
@ Nerdynomicon.
Gotcha. All
right. Facebook.com/Nerdynomicon.
Awesome. well, all our music is provided by Warp 11. Our intro is done by Dave Wilkes. You can find us on Twitter, our Synthaholics duo. Dave is David_J_Duncan.
Yep.
I'm at BlackBird2004. You can go onto Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. 5 stars would be very nice, and a nice little comment.
No profanity. Apple Podcast does not like that. I learned that the hard way.
I fucking love these guys.
Actually, I think that was the comment that got banned on there.
Also, join our Facebook group. We can go to Facebook.com/Synthaholics. We got a nice little community. People chime in their thoughts and post funny memes and stuff like that. It's everybody's been pretty awesome there.
All things that'll make you smile.
Yeah. Also, you can go, if you have any money throw our way, you go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics. Throw us some money. Keep the big wheels of industry of podcasts going.
I love it.
Basically, just keep our light bulbs turned on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you don't have any money, just tell your friends, tell your parents, tell your grandparents.
Tell your grandparents. Tell them, hey, I'm listening to a podcast about the next generation, Grandpa. Can you tell me about the old generation?
Well, son, let me tell you, the Bajoran, they were all around here.
Back in my day, we didn't have Bajorans.
We had to walk 15 miles for a Romulans.
The Romulans chased us ragged. And I had no shoes.
Uphill both ways.
Yes, both ways.
In the snow.
So all those good things. Thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper.
Peace. Shit our pants, you're the best drinking friend I ever